Hello, and thank you for being a part of Retail Online Integration's inaugural webinar week, Christmas in July, preparing for the holiday season. I'm Joe Keenan, Managing Editor of Retail Online Integration and the host of today's live webinar. This session is called An E-Commerce Holiday Checklist, What You Need to Do to Improve Your Website's Conversion Rate. Before we get going, I'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, CompuWare, a leading technology performance company that provides software, experts, and best practices to ensure applications work well and deliver business value. Please stay tuned at the end of the hour for a special freebie from CompuWare put together just for webinar attendees. For those of you that are new to our live webinars, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of your experience today. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's speaker. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Here today to discuss how to optimize your website's conversion rate is Tim Ash, CEO of SiteTuners, an agency that improves clients' conversion rates. Tim is also the chair of the International Conversion Conference event series, as well as the author of the best-selling book, Landing Page Optimization, which is now available in its second edition. Without further ado, I'd like to pass things over to Tim to get us started.
Great. Thanks so much, Joe. Really appreciate it. My name is, again, Tim Ash, and I'm the CEO of SiteTuners. And we're on this webinar today, I'm hoping you guys will make some noise on Twitter. The hashtag is ROIWebinar, and my Twitter handle, as you can see there, is @Tim_Ash. So you like it, you don't like it, either way, we want to hear about it. Just to give you a little bit of quick background about the company so you understand where we're coming from. We help companies improve their conversion rates. We can do that via reviews, whole website redesigns from the ground up, coming up with landing page test plans, or building internal optimization teams and mentoring companies so they can come up the learning curve more quickly. We work with both large and small companies, so hopefully my broad perspective will be useful to you. So today I just want to talk about a couple of things. The first is I'm going to start with a couple of insults, and then I'm going to close with a couple of commitments. And in between, hopefully you'll get a lot of useful information about things that you can do right away to improve your website. But I want to start by just saying that most of us are turning the wrong knobs. We're driving traffic to our website. We're worrying about SEO and pay-per-click and our affiliate traffic, email marketing. But the experience of what happens on our website or our landing pages is really, really being ignored. And so we think that things are good. And I'm here to tell you folks that they're not. So here are the first of my two insults. You are ignorant and blind. Actually, I guess that's a combination insult there. But what I mean by that is most of us as online marketers don't actually ever interact with our clients, with our website visitors. We sit in our cubicle probably and talk to other people in the online marketing group or coworkers, and we don't really understand the perspective of our visitor. And that leads to our second problem. And, yes, I'm here to tell you, your baby is ugly. And I don't mean your actual baby. I'm sure they're adorable and all, but I'm talking about your website and your landing pages. Most of us can't see our ugly babies because we created them. Our landing pages are our babies. We fell in love with them. We built them with loving care. We invested a lot in them. And for our professional, kind of, I guess you could say, ego And our personal satisfaction, we have to think of them as pretty, and they're not. So most of us kind of think of the experience on the web as rolling out the red carpet for our visitors. And in fact, it's not like that at all. Just because you're making money doesn't mean you're doing a good job. From your audience's perspective, this is really more what it looks like, these giant castle walls they have to scale. That's right. It's not a red carpet. Imagine having to, with your bare hands, climb up these castle walls. By the way, I've made it kind of benign in this picture. What I haven't shown are the people at the top of the wall shooting arrows at you and dumping pots of boiling oil on your head and all of that. But this is really the state of affairs for most e-commerce sites and websites in general. And again, you know, we kind of don't want to hear it, but I'm here to give you a quick checklist of how you can improve things in time for Q4. So I'm going to give you 10 quick tips on how to increase online conversion. And these come in the form of what not to do and what to do instead. I'll try to give you some quick advice, but it's often easier to illustrate these problems by showing you kind of the bad examples. So I'll try to mix in some good, but going to be a lot of bad in there. So these are no particular order. If you want to tweet them, they're not necessarily most important first. And there are 10. We're going to go through them in rapid-fire fashion. The first is dress nicely. That's tip number one. And I don't know, I'm a big fan of the show Mad Men, and they're always so nattily dressed, or at least they are in the show. I don't know if that's what the 60s were really like. But why do we dress nicely? So people will like us, so they'll respect us. Even though we're not in their cultural tribe, they're still going to respect the fact that we took the care in our appearance. Actually, there have been studies that show that people will follow a person in a business suit out into traffic, but won't follow people that are dressed in regular clothes or more casual clothes. There's a certain kind of authority that goes with being nicely dressed. So my question to you is, are you dressed nicely? Well, let's take a look at a quick example here, one of my favorites. This is Rick Jones Pianos. Grand Pianos, anyone? Would you buy a grand piano from this company? This was their homepage not so long ago. It's changed a bit, but it's essentially unchanged. $25,000 grand piano bought from this site, it's just not going to happen because they didn't dress nicely. This website looks like some kind of time warp flashback to the 80s or something. My favorite feature of it actually are the two red home buttons in the upper left and right corners. It's almost like little shift keys on a keyboard or something. When one home button is just not enough. But think about it. What are they saying with this kind of appearance? We don't really respect ourselves, so why should you respect us? Now, these guys happen to be on the East Coast, but I'm going to use an example a little bit closer to home. I live in San Diego, and in fact, in Point Loma, a nice boaty part of the city where all the sailboats are and the America's Cup races were. Well, this is a website for Cabrillo Yacht Sales. Now, remember, this company is apparently or ostensibly trying to sell 6- or 7-figure yachts. And look at their website. It's just the production quality is horrible. And no self-respecting person would buy a yacht from them. Now you could argue and say, hey, look, you know, you can't really get the full effect of it. They have that beautiful animated American flag in the middle of the page, and there's that nice shot of San Diego Harbor taken from a helicopter. But come on, folks, this is just not going to measure up. So take a hard look at your website appearance. Are you dressing nicely? And if not, you need to get dressed up for fourth quarter. A lot of that's not hard to do. You can do it by just a facelift to your website, and a lot of times the changes can kind of take effect globally, so redesign your page shell, put a little thought into the production values of your site, because that standard is really going up every day. And, you know, this site might have actually been okay back in 1995. It would have been probably an advanced site. But, again, the bar is moving, and you have to be perceived as one of the sharper dressers. All right, let's move on to tip number two, declutter. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, a lot of our sites suffer from what I call and-itis. And-itis is adding things to them, and adding visual clutter in particular. and it's really a deadly disease, your conversion rate and your website sales can die because of anditis. Here's an example. Anybody want to buy some barbells on this site? By the way, you're not getting its full glory. I mean, they're ready for fourth quarter because they have the Christmas theme going, but some of that text on the page is blinking reverse yellow. Like the driving directions part in the middle of the page is actually blinking because, you know, that's really has to be the most important item on that page. But everything else screams out for your attention and competes for your attention. And it's not just the products. The products are probably fine. You have various kinds of weight benches and machines and weight stacks. That's fine if it was organized properly. But each one is in its own little box with its own little key line, with its own little background color. It's all just chopped up into this dense maze of awful pictures and low-quality thumbnails. So just hacking away and reducing that clutter would go a long way towards improving conversion rates. A lot of times, another way to declutter is just to get rid of the gimmicks. We all think that, you know, fun gimmicks are very interesting. Here's an example of one. I showed up at this page, and instantly, and I mean instantly, as soon as I showed up, this light box popover showed up and said, would you like to chat with an online representative? Jane said, hi, can I help you? And, of course, you know my answer to that, which is no, go away, Jane. I don't understand the thinking of where somebody wants to just kind of interrupt you on the way into a page before you even have a chance to experience it. So get rid of gimmicks like that. And if you have an e-commerce store, I talk about this in the second edition of my book. I have some best practices for e-commerce. Don't use gimmicks like the magnifying glass, which lets you zoom into a certain portion of the picture, and that actually covers up your call to action on your product detail page. I mean, there are all of these things you could do, but you probably shouldn't do. It's kind of like rock and roll music in the 70s, you know, when synthesizers first came out and everybody had these really dreamy electronic music things going on. And after about 5 years, thankfully, it subsided. But a lot of times on the web, we're always just throwing in the latest little gadget and cluttering up the page and making it more complicated from the perspective of the visitor. And we don't really want to do that. All right, number three on my hit parade of things you could be doing is to simplify. You can see there's a theme here with the decluttering and the simplification. But a lot of times people on the web want simple choices. They don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about how you've organized information or what kind of digested or to do the heavy lifting. They don't even want to think. They literally don't want to think. They want to look at pictures and click on stuff. They don't want to read pages like this. Can you imagine? This is a product detail page or kind of a landing page for men's designer clothing. You know, there's one photograph on it, but then it's densely packed text. This might as well be a magazine page for all the good it's going to do. Nobody on the web reads. People have the attention span of a lit match when they're on the web because that's the only reasonable response to having a world of infinite information and choice. And so they are just going to plow through whatever they can, look for interesting pictures or links or buttons to click on, but they're not going to be reading text. So another way to kind of simplify is to cut back on the amount of text you have. Now, I'm not saying don't do this if you have complicated products that require explanation. On a product detail page, that's absolutely the right thing to do. You should have tabs that say, you know, specifications, detailed description, compatibility, if those things are appropriate for your products. And all of that information should be there, but it should be hidden. It should be in a tab or something. It shouldn't be just kind of out front everywhere. You have to simplify and clean up, and don't be afraid of white space on the page. A lot of times negative space or kind of areas around important objects actually bring them into sharper relief and make them seem more important, while at the same time giving your eye a place to rest. And that's really, really important because if you have pages that are this complicated, it just makes us think, oh, this is going to be too much work. Even reading it's too much work. I imagine what the actual content's going to be. It's going to be way too much work. And again, admit it, none of you, even if you're the most meticulous person in the rest of your life, like to spend a lot of time examining detailed stuff on web pages when they're in front of your web browser. All right, let's move on to number four. Number four is demonstrate outside authority. Demonstrate authority. Now, let's take a quick look at this picture. Now, if, let's say you needed your gallbladder removed, and these folks walked into the room, and this guy with the glasses came up to you and said, "Hi, I'm going to be doing your surgery today." Would you feel good about that? Most of you probably say, yeah, he seems reasonably competent, probably has experience, and doesn't look quite old enough to have, you know, unsteady hands yet. So, yeah, okay, sounds good to me. Okay, folks, think about it. Do you know what this is? This is a stock photography image of a guy dressed up as a doctor. I'm sure he's a model and not really a doctor. Just because he has that white coat and stethoscope doesn't make him a doctor. It's kind of like the old joke, well, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. Well, you know, the reason that works is that we suspend our disbelief and we like to, you know, take mental shortcuts. And one of the ways we can take mental shortcuts is by trusting outside authorities. And even the trappings of outside authority, in this case the lab coat and the stethoscope, are enough to make us kind of take action or to comply with someone's wishes. And this has consequences in the online world as well. Here's an example. This is a lead generation site for a DVD duplication company called SF Video. They do large-scale Blu-ray and DVD duplication. So on this landing page, we have the quote form on the left, and I kind of grayed that out. On the right and taking up most of the page are their client logos. So chances are if you're thinking about having some Blu-rays duplicated for your company, your thought track is going something a little like this. Wow, they work with Nike and Walmart and ABC. I hope they'll take on my little itty-bitty company and my little itty-bitty duplication job, right? Because is it a question in your mind at all that these folks can deliver on their promise of getting your DVDs done? No. No question at all. There's an example of how to use outside authority to sell your products. Now, in your case, that might be the brand names you carry. That can be a very powerful form of authority. Just the fact that you're authorized to sell the brands or carry certain brands, it shows that you're credible. You're not selling some off-label stuff or something that someone's never heard of. Another form of outside authority are media mentions. Now, here's a health quiz called the Real Age Test. It's a free quiz. You answer some lifestyle and questions, and it calculates your quote-unquote real age or how well you've maintained your body, you know, your biological age as opposed to your chronological age. And one of the things that we did a test, and one of the things that we changed on this page, as you can see, and I've highlighted it, are the media mentions as seen in MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, New York Times, and so on. Now, remember, they're asking for very, very sensitive information. Do you smoke? Do you do drugs? Do you exercise? Are you overweight? Just to calculate your real age. Well, 40% more people completed the real age quiz when they had these trust symbols on the left. And again, it's a use of outside authority, in this case of media mentions. So if your company has been mentioned in the media or your industry has been mentioned in the media, you know, please say, as seen on, and put the masthead of that media company. And that's very important because, again, these are media brands that have spent hundreds of millions of dollars drumming their brands into our heads, and you're just borrowing that authority. You're piggybacking off of it to make it work for you. So if you've been featured in any media, that should be front and center, not buried under, you know, the press room page under About Us on your site. Let's move on to number five, and that is keeping your promises. Now, this is often not a problem of your website, and it's not a problem of your landing page. So what do I mean by that? Well, just like this broken bridge you're seeing here, you didn't keep your promises. People just don't show up on your website. They show up on your website from somewhere. They didn't just teleport there onto the holodeck of the Starship Enterprise or something. They came from somewhere. And that means they probably had an expectation. So I'll give you a specific example. So let's say you're looking for a best digital camera and you type that in. Well, you might get a pay-per-click ad back that says, I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble with my controls here. Here we go. You might get a pay-per-click ad back that says something like this, best digital camera. Get expert reviews of digital cameras from Consumer Reports. Now think about this. What is the expectation that is being set in our minds? Well, I typed in best digital camera. Would expert reviews help me find the best digital camera? Absolutely. And boy, look, Consumer Reports, they're this objective consumer rating agency, and I can trust them, right? Isn't that fantastic? So let's say we click through on this, and what we got was a page, a landing page, that was looking something like this, top-rated digital cameras. So you think, great, things are going really well. Let's see, the headline says, well, which of the 56 models tested are the best? It has the brands listed in the upper right. So it looks like we're going to get to a rich source of information until we look a little further down the page and we get this, join today. Join today. Now, that's shocking. Why is it shocking? I mean, join today seems like a pretty innocuous button, but let's go back. What did they actually promise us on the previous page? What did they promise when we went to look for digital cameras? Well, they promised us expert reviews from Consumer Reports. And what did we actually get when we got to the page? Well, we didn't get any expert reviews. We actually got an offer to join. And what does that really mean? Well, give us your money. That's what it means. So they kind of did a bait and switch on us. They said, join today, when they really meant to say, give us your money. Or another way of putting it, don't ever give us any of your money because we just lied to you and we broke our promise. You don't want to be that person. So it's really important to keep your promises. Let me show you another example. Let's say you Google laptop, or you want to buy a laptop, and you get this really, kind of bad SEO'd search result back. And now this is not in the pay-per-click part of the search results now. This is SEO, and it's for a site called buysuperlaptop.com. Best big screen laptop, best large screen laptop, 15-inch laptop screen, laptop sale online. You can see that they're really stuffing all those keywords in there, right? But okay, let's just say that I found that credible enough in the first place, and actually I don't, but what would my expectation be when I got to that page? What's the promise they're making me just by creating this search result? Well, I expect to see a big screen laptop, right? Or the best big screen laptop. Well, I'm going to see if they deliver when they go to that page. And one way to check is to see the landing page. All right, here we are. Cheap, the best technology. We have a page full of different gear. Anybody here able to find the best large screen laptop? Well, there actually are a couple of laptops, one in the upper right, the Asus, and the HP Pavilion, a little bit, kind of cut off down below. But most of this page is not about laptops at all. So this is an example of kind of, a bait and switch. What you really want to do is to have as much continuity of intent as possible. So whatever you promised them in your ad or in your blog post or on your Facebook fan page or wherever they're coming from, you need to deliver on that promise. You need to keep the promise that you made. And that's very, very important. So what does that mean for you? What can you do to improve things for Q4? Well, if you're responsible for conversion, go talk to your pay-per-click team. If you're responsible for conversion, go talk to your affiliate managers and say, hey, all of the affiliates, which ones are big ones? Which ones are sending the most traffic and the most sales? Can we take a look at their landing pages and where people are coming from? Or not their landing pages, but what's happening upstream of our actual website? Can we bring into closer alignment what they're promising and what we're delivering? Or should we change their message to be more in alignment with our page? This can go either way. The point is the traffic people can't be completely divorced from the conversion people. It's kind of like saying, okay, I delivered something to you, but I'm just going to drop it off at the curb, and it's up to you to drag it up the stairs and into your house and set it up. I mean, you don't want those kind of silos or disconnects between the folks driving the traffic and responsible for that and the folks responsible for converting it. So just it's very simple. Oftentimes, if for pay-per-click campaigns, this is a matter of just echoing the keyword in the page title and making sure you're landing them on the most specific page possible, the most relevant page. But keep your promises. The number one driver of conversion is actually matching your visitor's intent. Or to put it another way, it's properly managing their expectations. So check your upstream stuff. Check your upstream data sources and where people are coming from, or traffic sources, I mean. And also make sure that it's in alignment with your landing page. You can change one or both. Preferably you create them to work as a tag team and tandem, but you should make sure that there's a high degree of consistency between them. All right, we're halfway through. We're moving on to number six. Number six tip for improving holiday conversion is limit choices. This is a really counterintuitive one. I get a lot of pushback on this one, but let's say you have a large e-commerce catalog, and many of you may have heard of the book that talks about the long tail. The long tail is wonderful in keyword research. The long tail is wonderful in DVD sales, you know, or rentals. That's why Netflix, you know, made Blockbuster go out of business, because Blockbuster concentrated on the head end on all of the kind of the big breakout movies, and Netflix gives you access to every movie out there, and their recommendation engine helps you pick out what you might like based on what other similar people have liked, helps you discover this infinite amount of choice. Well, isn't choice wonderful? Well, I'm here to tell you it's not. The fact is we don't want choice. We're inundated with choice. We run from choice. The best thing you could do for me as a curator of your own website and of your own content is to limit my choices and give me a small, clear number of choices. Let me show you what I mean by that. As you may have gathered already with my digital camera example, I'm a bit of a camera buff. Well, here's the homepage for Adorama, which is a pretty big online camera selling site. Now, I'm going to save you the trouble. There are 146, yes, we counted them, 146 clickable links on this homepage. And it hasn't changed much to this day. So on the left, you have these crazy deep navigation menus. You might go down to number 17 up there and find the category that says underwater. Maybe that's what I'm here for. Or you might look at one of the 12 featured products on this page out of 100,000 probably that they carry and decide, yeah, I really need that walk stool in the upper left. Or you might look at one of those actually changing animated banner ads on the right of the site that just take you to other parts of the same site. But my favorite, below that big orange AIRC banner, is a small text link that says, How to Master Dog Photography by Bowser. Yes, how about you? Did you come here to read that article, How to Master Dog Photography? Me too. Wow, what a coincidence. And you know, you could sit there in a meeting with the folks running the team, and everybody's probably going to have a valid reason for adding what they added to this page. And individually, all of them make a lot of sense. But the problem with too much choice is we won't invest the time to dig through it. The biggest kind of impact or the biggest load you can put on people is to ask for their attention and their time. It's a very, very heavy price to pay. Most people are not willing to pay with their time. So what should these folks have done instead? Well, if you have a large catalog, here's some quick tips for you. Get rid of any product level information on your homepage. The homepage is about navigation. It's to get me closer to a particular product, not to get me to buy one with a buy link right off the homepage. So they're not really competitors. They kind of sell more high-end pro gear, but B&H photo video, I've taken out the rest of the page shell, but I'm just showing you the body of their homepage. And I use this as an example in my landing page optimization book, is like the perfect homepage navigation for a large catalog. Now, I just want to point out some wonderful things here that helped me limit choice. Again, they probably sell a very broad array of objects, of tens of thousands of different items or SKUs. But effectively, they've reduced them for me down to 12 because it's a 4x3 grid, and I can look and zero in on a picture, and pictures are very powerful. Half of our brain is devoted, more than half of our brain, to processing visual information in all kinds of different ways and to do that efficiently. So rich photographic images convey a lot of information. But they're not just images of products. Notice a couple of things they've done really well. Each one is a composite image of at least two different items. What that does is it gives you the breadth of what's in that category. It also makes it clear that it's not an individual item, but it rather gives you this notion of, if you will, category-ness. And so when you see that the third one at the top there, professional video, there's a dolly with wheels and a video camera with a shotgun mic. Well, that's clearly not consumer video, right? When you see the photography, the first one, there are digital SLRs and point-shoot cameras. That gives you a range of what's in that category. And so what you can do is zero in on the picture because you know what you're there for, and then safely ignore the rest of the page. So even though it's pretty densely packed, you don't have to look at it. You have to look at one of those 12 areas. So when I look at the one with the large screen TV, boom, immediately under that is a category label that says home entertainment. It reinforces where I am. And then it shows not all, but the top few subcategories with a see all expansion. So for an advanced user, they can drill down that extra level right here off the home page without having to do a lot of work. So it's the greatest good for the greatest number. So, again, they're not exposing every subcategory. That would be overwhelming, but just the top ones. And so this is probably as close as it gets to large catalog navigation nirvana, a grid with really nicely selected category images, not individual products, a restatement of the category below and subcategories down below. So, again, I'm going to throw up the Adorama site in comparison, and can you see kind of the conceptual difference between these, how much harder it is for me to figure out what I need to get on this page compared to the B&H photo page? I mean, they're just night and day in terms of their clarity. So the purpose of the home page is to limit choice, is to give me a small number of choices, give me my options, give me my map of the world, if you will, and get me closer to my goal. It's to get me to click and to get me off the home page. It's not to sell me something. Often a very common mistake. Here's another example. If you look at Overstock.com and you happen to land on their laptops page, are you kidding me? Take a look at this. It's just this wall-to-wall carpet bombing of individual products. And by the way, that's not the only part of the page. I'm just showing you the above-the-fold portion. Here's the next segment of it, and this thing goes on for about 10 screenfuls. That's not okay, folks. It's up to you to limit my choice. It's up to you to organize it, to drill it down through categories and appropriate subcategories, to organize it for me and only show me product-level information when you get down to a reasonable set of a few items that I can compare side by side, because I can't compare hundreds of items in my head. All right, let's move on. The next thing I want to talk about, my tip number 7, is to clarify your call to action. What am I supposed to do on this page? I mean, it should be a pretty obvious answer to that. Well, here's a question for you, the same question. What are you expected to do on this page? I don't know. Some of you are probably thinking, you know, pop open a Corona and enjoy the beach, right? Well, no, that's not what they actually want you to do. They want you to click on the beach scene, and eventually that literally a splash page will go away even if you don't click on it after 8 or 9 seconds, and it's going to go straight to the homepage of their catalog, the Sandal World catalog. They sell sandals. They don't sell beach vacations. But you wouldn't know it because you kind of look at this scene and you go, what do you want me to do on this page? It's not at all clear. And there's lots of ways that you can kind of lose that call to action. Part of it is surrounding it by clutter. Here's another page. This is actually a pay-per-click landing page. And I would challenge you to find what they actually want you to do on this page. It's just this big, riotous explosion and mess. The call to action is not clear. The only folks that usually get this are the ones that own iPhones, because Yes, you guessed it. Out of all the stuff on this page, Vanna White pointing to the laptop and the red line that says call before December 30th, they actually want you to click on the iPhone, that little black iPhone that says free 30-day trial. That's their call to action. Is it clear? I would submit not so much. And so don't let decoration get in the way. Don't let competing stuff on the page get in the way. Here's another example, homepage of a catalog. But is it really? I don't know. It looks just like a flyer that I would get in the mail. It has some pictures. Are they categories? Do they represent kids' lunch boxes? I can't really tell. Do I have any idea of the breadth of their product line or what they actually even want me to do, what do they want me to click on? No idea. This is not a clear call to action. This is a mosaic tile design that their graphic designer, did. But, home pages aren't the only pages that have problems with them. Often it's deeper in the site that you get problems. Let me show you another example. Now, this is a pretty big site. You've probably heard of 1-800-Flowers. They do about $1 billion a year, I think, in sales, and hundreds of millions of that. I think about $300 million is just online. And this is the product detail page on their site. Let me see. Let me put that another way. This is the page that everybody has to pass through to give them their money, to put something in the cart, right? So, but what do they want you to actually do on this page? What's the call to action here on this product detail page? It's not immediately clear, is it? In fact, the least visually obnoxious thing on this page is what they want you to click on, which is that light violet button near the bottom of the middle of the page that says select delivery date. But there are these shocking purple things on the page. There's a giant picture of a rose, in case you're unclear that you're in the roses category now. There's a picture of a florist holding a bouquet. There's a banner ad at the top, celebrate mom for who she is, which takes you to another product detail page on the site and off of this one. And what they actually want you to do is to click that lonely little button that near the bottom middle of the page. So as a design exercise, they asked us, well, can you redesign this page and basically keep the content but make the call to action clear? And so that's what we did. Now, hopefully you can instantly say, well, duh, you should push the green button, view delivery date. You have a nice big product shot. You have a big call to action block in blue, and inside of it's a single green button. And it should be obvious. It's what I call the obvious standard. So don't hide your call to action. It should be this clear and obvious. And the best way to get there is to declutter things. Let me show this to you another way. We have a software called Attention Wizard, which predicts where someone's going to look on a landing page during the first few seconds of their visit. Now, it's not the same as eye tracking or mouse movement recording. It's just a software algorithm based on what we know about visual attention in the brain. So these hot spots you're seeing are where we predict the most attention is going to go. And as you can see, the biggest hot spot's actually on the bouquet of flowers, which is great, because that's your hero shot, as it were, or the product shot, and you want that to be clear. But there are also other hot spots on the big rose, on the florist, on the upper left, on the picture in the lower left. None of the predicted attention is going to be on that call to action button. None of it. So the call to action is not clear at all to somebody who's scanning the page for the first time. And so one of the on the redesign page, you see a very different picture. You have, again, a lot of attention on the flower bouquet, and then a big, fat, big attention hotspot on the call to action button. And even between them, those little thin yellow lines, that's your kind of automatic, involuntary eye movements called saccades that happen very, very quickly to help you establish a picture of the world. Well, those are ping-ponging back and forth between the hero shot and the call to action. So there's very much less wasted attention on a page like this. So you can use tools like this. They're very inexpensive to just try out your designs. It doesn't even have to be a live page. And make sure you cut out the distractions and make your call to action clear. All right, we have a couple more. One thing that I'm a big fan of is social proof. Now, we live in this kind of social age, and what the behavior of our peers really matters. Social proof is all about, again, shortcuts. Don't you just want to look up when you see those people? They're all looking up. We have this like herd instinct that kicks in automatically, and we all follow the herd. Again, It's a way to not have to spend brain cycles and not have to expend that effort. We just, you know, two restaurants, one's empty, one's got a line outside the door, you'll wait in the line. And there's no objective difference between them in many cases. It's just social proof. Lots of people are standing in line, so it must be good. It's that kind of scarcity combined with social proof. Social proof rests on a couple of things. It rests on a lot of people just like us having a good outcome. So here's an example from REI. Here's a backpack. Now, let's say I'm interested in getting this backpack. Well, REI's done a great job reinforcing this for me. I'm just going to highlight some of the social sharing information. There's a product rating, so I can immediately see how good people think it is. There are actual reviews that I can read. I can write a review. There are 90 Facebook likes. I can email this to a friend and or bookmark and share it other ways. So they've done a really nice job showing me from the perspective of the people that I care about. And those are not my friends, my closest family members, my coworkers. In this case, in this context, the people I care about are the people that already bought this backpack. And I'm hearing their voice emerge loud and clear. So if you can put reviews on your site, if you can have ratings, that over time becomes actually a very defendable position, that the value of that consumer information, that meta information, that user-generated content, whatever you want to call it, just continues to grow and becomes a good and a competitive advantage for you. All right, let's move on and talk about number nine. Number nine is speeding up the checkout. Now, you know, the checkout experiences are usually pretty horrible. They're poorly thought through. And the reason, and I'm a recovering technologist myself, so I'm allowed to say this. I almost got my PhD in computer science, is technologists. The checkout process is usually on a secure server. It's not maintained on your site. It might be a third-party shopping cart. It, in any case, it involves forms and collection of information. And so the programmers get involved. And programmers are typically not that concerned with a good user experience. And so a lot of things, from error messages to the complexity of it to the assumptions built into it, are really not good. So let me show you a quick example. So a Newegg here, I'm buying this computer. Okay, they have some upsells for, you know, would you like an extended warranty and other stuff. Okay, fine. So then we continue on. And now it's in my cart. And I can continue to check out, even though there are three different buttons on this page. One is update quantity. One is remove. And only in this weird kind of lower left position, you know, can you continue on. Then it gives you, on the next page, a very, very technical explanation that says, hey, you want this laptop repair? You're going to have to go to the people that made the components that go into the laptop. Don't call us. We won't call you because we're not servicing this laptop. Now, do you agree to that or do not agree? Because you can't continue without agreeing to that. It's like, wow, the lawyers got involved on that one. Is that a good user experience? Is that a necessary step in a checkout process? No way. That's really scary stuff. Basically has a whole list of 800 numbers, which I'm not going to have when I actually have my problem, probably later on, that I'm expected to call instead of calling Newegg for customer support. You know, I'm still going to call Newegg, right? So why even bother putting that in there? All right, and then it gets worse. Then you actually start the checkout, and you have to create an account. Now, to these guys' credits, they're assuming that you know, they're giving me the option of kind of an existing customer. I don't think that's actually accurate. Most people aren't returning customers; they're new customers. And so, putting existing customers first and trying to be nice is actually not appropriate because 95% of people are going to need the bottom of the page. And at the bottom of the page, they make me create an account and sign up before I can check out. And they ask me for my email address. Oh, but then they ask me to re-enter my email address. Then they ask me for my password. But then they ask me to re-enter my password. They think I'm an idiot, or they don't want to do error checking, or to make sure that there's a properly formed email address. And they're forcing me to do all this extra work and plow through it. For what? I just want to open my wallet right now and give you money, and I'm not even allowed to do that until I create an account first. Now, you can argue that you need all this stuff, but you don't. Your technical guys can work around it. They can take my money and then get my email address in that order. Don't get confused about the purpose of the checkout process. And you can see here, only on this last step do I finally get to pay. Was that a comfortable experience? No, it was really, really horrible. So fix your checkout processes, simplify them. Think of it from the perspective of a lazy, attention deficit disorder type of person that has no brand loyalty. And that'll be pretty close to reality. And then one final tip, which is to provide reassurance. Provide reassurance in the form of various kinds of trust marks. Now, you can see here on Smart Bargains, they have great trust marks, Visa, UPS, Better Business Bureau, but they're all at the bottom of the page where you won't see them. And instead, now I don't actually suggest that you go to this extreme, but PetSmart, this has taken a while, their logo in the upper left, which is a very strong convention, put the HackerSafe symbol up there, which is now McAfee Secure, and they move their logo to the middle and jumbo size it, but you instantly get this two-part message. We're safe to shop with. We're PetSmart. And so the forms of credit cards you accept, whether you take PayPal, safe shopping seals, return policies, guarantees, all of that needs to be front and center during that experience. So I have transactional trust. So here's a quick recap of the 10 tips we talked about. And, again, I won't repeat them. You'll have access to the PowerPoint presentation here. But I'm actually going to leave you with one bonus tip. So I promised 10. I want to under-promise and over-deliver. My final tip for you, if you want things to ring in a very, very happy new year after a successful fourth quarter, is do things quickly. There's more and more evidence mounting that people have a very, very short tolerance for slow internet. Here's some information from Kissmetrics on the probability of bouncing or abandoning the page as a function of page load time. Basically, if your page takes longer to load, people are just going to leave. They don't have the patience to do it. Every second counts. And then for mobile audience, it's actually even worse. People, the experience of mobile web visitors, I mean, they're conditioned to wait longer because they're usually on slow connections, but still the majority of people will only wait 6 to 10 seconds for a page to load in. And if you think that's a long time, or if you don't think that's a long time, try counting to 10 Mississippi and see if you'd still be sticking around. And there's all kinds of just objective evidence that all of the majors have done. Just list some of the statistics here. Basically, you slow things down, you lose people. You lose revenue, you lose conversion, you lose customer satisfaction. So speed it up. Do whatever you have to do to speed up your website. Get off of that clunky CMS that's probably costing you millions of dollars if you have a decent-sized business. Make sure you use content delivery networks. Whatever other tricks you can use, write clean code. Get faster hosting servers, whatever it takes to speed up your experience. All right, well, I told you I started with a couple of insults, and I'm going to finish with a couple of commitments. So the first thing I want you to do is to take off your rose-colored glasses and repeat after me. My baby is ugly. No one can hear you, so it's okay to say it. My baby is ugly. And you've seen it. I've shown you 10 things you could improve, or 11 things, actually, that compose that ugly baby. So now all you have to do is just one more thing. Go and do something about it. Take the easiest thing I said, the easiest thing for you to change on this webinar, and please go fix it today. You're going to have a very, very Merry Christmas. If you want to reach out to me, I'm very accessible. Just want to give a shout out to if you're interested in improving your conversion rate. We do quick online reviews called Express Reviews, so reach out to us there. Attention Wizard, I've already mentioned. You can try it out for a penny if you like. And come to one of our upcoming conversion conference events if you want to drink from the fire hose. The next one is in Fort Lauderdale. Then we have London and Dusseldorf in Europe and back to Las Vegas and Chicago next year. Pick up a copy of my book. There's some terrific sections in there about best practices for e-commerce specifically. And, again, feel free to connect. I'm always willing to get engaged in the conversation. Joe, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Okay, great. Well, thanks, Tim. So we've covered quite a bit of ground here on website conversion optimization. We do have some time still for some questions from the audience. So I just want to remind everyone that you can submit your questions using the Q&A box on your console. So, Tim, first question I have here refers to the section that you talked about decluttering your website. Have you seen any proven A/B studies as far as cleaning up a page, increasing conversions? The attendee says that he's seen that some studies that seem to support a bit more text works better than imagery. Can you talk to that a little bit?
I'm not saying text versus imagery. With regard to imagery, I would say decluttering means getting rid of gratuitous graphics. I mean, we have a very strict standard that I talk about in the book is if a graphic element on the site or on the page does not directly support a conversion action, it should not be on the page. It's that simple. And that's a very strict standard, and you're going to get pushback from your graphic designers that want to decorate the page. So I'm just saying get rid of unnecessary graphics. I'm not saying you shouldn't have text on the page either. Usually it should be summary text in most cases, again, unless you're on a product detail page and someone's looking for the full specs or something. But people don't read on the web. So there have been a lot of studies by Jacob Nielsen, who's kind of the godfather of web usabilities, keynote at our conference, and he's shown that when you cut the text on the page, conversion goes up, retention of information goes up, and satisfaction goes up. People don't read on the web, so don't expect them to.
Okay. Next one I have here refers to the checkout and your section on that. The attendee wants to know, should some companies collect email address first to follow up with cart abandonment emails? What are your thoughts on that?
Great question. Yes, we're big fans of getting emails first. So if you have a checkout process, ask for an email address. In fact, before they even complete that first page where the email address is, make sure you kind of server-side record it. In other words, as soon as they put in the address, grab it, even if they don't finish the rest of the page. And then immediately send them an email saying, hey, what happened? You know, you didn't finish your checkout. And a day later, send them another one saying, hey, did you forget you still have this stuff in your cart? And maybe a week later, I mean exactly a week later, try to catch them in the same spot, you send them another one that maybe pops them a 10% coupon or something. But this needs to be done correctly. There are companies that just specialize in this abandonment recovery. I would say check out CY, SEEWHY.com. They're whitelisted with all the email service providers, have high deliverability, and know how to put these kind of recovery campaigns in place. Usually you can pick up 15 to 30% of abandoners with a good abandonment recovery plan. So definitely get that email up front.
Okay. Next question here is, how about a free shipping banner? Does that count, in your opinion, as too much clutter on the homepage? What's your opinion on that?
A free shipping banner,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying as a policy at your company, if you don't have free shipping, you're at a significant disadvantage. The only question in my mind is how do you make people aware of it? Banners are not good. A lot of people put this in the header of their site. I'm more of a fan of putting it in the content part of the page. And when you get down to an individual product, which is ultimately what I care about, you can say, free shipping on this item or free shipping on all items over $50. I'd make them aware of it at the product detail page probably. We're not big fans of having banners, especially if there's motion involved. That's a no-no.
Next question. This attendee says that a lot of your presentation showed examples for product-based websites and B2C-type sites. Do these same concepts apply to a website with services offered for being offered to businesses?
Absolutely. If you want to take a look at what we think of as the kind of best practices for a B2B site, which is primarily about lead gen and credibility, feel free to check ours out. But, the same principles of uncluttering, of having very few choices, some very clear ways to get off of your homepage, We have two orange buttons, large business, small business. We want you off that homepage and having a more targeted conversation with us. The difference with B2B is usually your call to action. You don't expect somebody to just buy our services after visiting our site. So usually it's a white paper download or an email capture in exchange for a newsletter sign up or something like that. It's a way to engage and start the conversation. It's usually a form fill and not a financial transaction.
Okay. Next question is in reference to your bonus point about speed. Do you have any tips or how can a company go about speeding up its site loading time?
Well, their whole website's devoted to that topic. I'm not really an expert, but at a high level, here's what I can tell you. Google tracks page load speed as part of its ranking algorithm now. So if nothing else, and if you have good, if you want to be strong in search engine optimization, you have to have fast page load speed. You can use content delivery networks to push content out and stage it all over the internet so it's always close to wherever someone's getting it from. You can use a quicker content management system, as I mentioned, and you can write cleaner code that is lighter weight. And again, another shout out for smaller graphics and no flash or animations or heavy items that are expensive in terms of file size.
Okay. Another question we have here is that attendee says that she's heard that some marketing people swear by long-term narrative pages for certain products. Where do you find that these types of pages are relevant?
Yeah, that's a good question. I like the way it was actually asked. It's not our long-form sales letters bad. I mean, it's the question is where are they useful? They're usually useful for consumer items where your informational products, for the most part, health and self-improvement, stuff that kind of goes to your vanity, you know, lose weight, improve your memory, get the six-pack abs you've always wanted, attract women. I mean, anything like that where you're downloading an ebook or maybe selling them vitamins on a continuity program, things like that. I'd say consumer items aimed at not the most sophisticated people in the world. And there's a whole art to direct response copywriting. Eugene Schwartz pioneered this back in the 50s. Unfortunately, his book's out of print, but you can maybe pick up a PDF version of it. I know there's some floating around. So it works. It works mostly for informational-based consumer products.
Next question is, do you find that consumers will scroll down a page and then this sort of second part of that, how important is the above-the-fold portion of your website pages?
There's an increasing tendency to scroll vertically because we have those little scrolly wheels in our mice. But at the same time, it's improved by, say, from 5% of people get to the bottom of a long page to 15% of people. It still means 85% of people won't scroll down to the bottom. So you have to be careful of that. At the same time, this notion of above the fold is kind of exploding. That's a newspaper term, you know, right? The part of the newspaper you see in the newsstand that's folded. But what does that mean when you have smartphones and small tablets and and other people like me, their desktop? You know, I'm sitting in front of two 24-inch monitors in tandem for the extra real estate. You know, the fold is very different. So designed for kind of a medium standard right now, I'd say that's for a 1024 wide page. So your actual page should be about 960 with scroll bars and so on. And fit in as much as you can. Vertical real estate is definitely precious.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time for today. So I'd like to, on behalf of Retail Online Integration and CompuAware, thank you for attending today's webinar. As mentioned at the beginning of our presentation today, as an added bonus for today's webinar attendees, CompuAware has recorded an additional 20-minute webinar to give you that extra leg up on your holiday planning. CompuAware session is called 360-degree web load testing, making sure your website is holiday ready. You can access this webinar via the link displayed on your screen now. We'll also send you this link in our post-event follow-up tomorrow if you don't have time to watch it now. As always, Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. Also, if you'd like to take just a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we'd be grateful. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. I hope to see you at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Thanks, everyone. Have a great afternoon.